The views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Good morning, everybody. Hey, how was your weekend? It's a good-looking Monday out there. Lots of blue sky, a few high clouds, and we're going to have a good week this week. I'm Peter Christian. Good morning, Mr. Nick Christensen. How you doing, sir?
Good morning.
So how was your weekend? Anything exciting going on?
I went to the lake and hung out with family. It was good.
Good. Well, yours truly, for the very first time, I didn't realize this. I had never been in what used to be Osprey, but now is Paddleheads Stadium. I'd never been to a game before, and our church had a big party there. They have groups, or I guess they have a special deal for groups who bring a large number of people in. And it was my very first time inside the stadium at Ogren Park at Allegiance Field on Friday. And we were all having a great time getting ready. They had all sorts of pregame festivities with there was a lot of little kids down there playing with the big leaguers, and it was fun to watch. However, just as the game got started, I mean, we're talking, I think they got their first batter up to bat, the visiting team, and the raindrops started, and some lightning hit the sky, and so a lot of folks just said, you know what, they're going to call this on account of rain, so there you go. But it was fun to see the stadium. It was fun.
Yeah, that's a bummer. I mean, do you get like a rain check for something like that? How do they handle that?
Actually, we had a special group thing going on where they gave us all free admission because we're one big church group. So it didn't cost us anything. But it would have been nice to see the game.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
The whole point of going. Yeah.
But it is Ogren Park at Allegiance Field. And right after we did that, we went to a party for a congressional candidate, Aaron Flint. And who happened to be there? But Kathy Ogren, she was there Friday at a support rally for congressional candidate Aaron Flint. Had a chance to visit with her and tell her about the stadium and how we enjoyed it. And she said, "Oh, I'm glad you went," and all that good stuff. So it was good.
Very nice.
So what did you do over the weekend, Mr. Nick?
I said I was at the lake with family.
That's right.
We it was our last family weekend of the year, and so. My niece was there, and she's 16 months now, I think.
Wow.
Maybe 15, but the lake isn't quite baby proof, you know, the patio. So it's a lot of watching her, making sure nothing happens and keeping her entertained and, you know, making sure nap time happens, all that fun stuff. But then, by the end of the weekend, you're kind of mentally just exhausted because it's all hands on deck, everybody making sure, nothing goes haywire and that everybody's having a good time. But it's always a lot of fun. You're just tired after.
Sure. I bet she loves her Uncle Nick, right?
I hope so. Yeah, well, she acts like
it. Of course she does. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah, it's fun.
All right. So as I mentioned, I had a chance to go to the Osprey game. I'm sorry, the Paddleheads game. And I also visited with Kathy Ogren at a support rally for congressional candidate Aaron Flint. Had a chance to visit with him a little bit, and he's running for Congress, and had a lot of folks there, do a fundraiser, things like that. So, you know, it is the political season, so there you go.
Yeah, it is. And we got open phones for the next 20 minutes or so, and then it'll be the KGVO Book Club.
Absolutely. So if there's something on your mind, give us a call. 406-721-1290 is our number. 1-800-568-5309. And whatever it is you want to talk about, that's fine. Something happened over the weekend that you'd like to talk about. Maybe a special thing happened in your family or a special event that you would like to talk about. Just feel free to pick up the phone and give us a call because it is open phones now for the next, about 20 minutes or so before we start the KGVO Book Club. So get on the phone, give us a call right now, 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Talk back statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Cool. cold showers? No.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. High pressure rebuilding over the Northern Rockies, and that means gradual warming as we start the new week with partly sunny skies and highs in the low 80s. A few clouds developing overnight, and there is a lingering chance of isolated showers or thunderstorms with lows down into the 40s, maybe even a little colder if skies clear. Mostly sunny with a few clouds at times on Tuesday, and then mostly sunny Wednesday and Thursday. Highs back into the mid-90s, could even be the low 90s by the end of the week.
Thank you so much for joining us on Talkback on this brand new week, Monday, August 17th. And we've got folks waiting on the line for open phones. Let's get started with Skip. Skip, good morning, sir. What's on your mind, please?
Oh, good morning, Peter, and thank you. Glad you had a nice weekend. Sounded exciting. And I wanted to tell everybody, especially with Valley County, but also I would say Missoula County, because this has to do with the Sheep Creek Mine, which is at the headwaters of the Bitterroot River.
Right.
And this is going to be pretty important. This is the third meeting, and it's going to be tomorrow, the 18th, Tuesday. And it's at the high school, the Hamilton High School, at 5:30 till 7:30. Our commissioners are going to be featured there, I would say. It's a good word, explaining to us dynamics that are happening and positions and the tools that we have in our pouch that we can work with to handle what will happen with this Sheep Creek mine.
Now, Skip, one quick question: is this an informational meeting, or is it going to be a for or against meeting, or what?
It's an informational meeting.
Okay.
But there's only a few people that I would suggest for, and that's probably the people that want to put in the mine.
Yeah.
But at the same time, this will go over all of the reasoning and the tools that we have at the state level in legislature and in departments like, say, DEQ, and then also at the federal level, what is happening with whatever information that is available. And this is a nonpartisan meeting.
Okay.
This is a meeting where red and blue is going to be sitting right next to each other, I hope.
That's good.
And be able to understand what the ramifications are of something like this. And that if it ever does happen, the more people know about it, Peter, I would suggest that the easier the impact on them in the future, and that for them to understand what the baby steps are.
You bet.
That actually the National Forest Service gets involved monitoring.
Skip, I hate to cut you short, but all of our phone lines are already full. So, thank you for letting us know about the meeting. We appreciate it. Nancy's up next. Nancy, good morning. You're on Talkback. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, morning, Glory. I want to talk about the James Webb Space Telescope and its recent new discovery.
Okay.
And astronomers are absolutely stunned. James Webb, of course, is the telescope that we launched from New Ghana, December 24th in 2021. And it's a million miles from Earth. It has discovered what the astronomers are calling a cosmic vine. This is a stretch of galaxies, ancient galaxies, 13 million light years, and a light year is about 100,000 miles.
Right.
No one can explain it exactly yet, but there's a variety of these galaxies in this formation. And all I can say is this, follow NASA, and there's a wonderful video on YouTube trying to explain this new discovery. And the LAMB dark spot matter model is what the astronomers usually use to try to explain the formation of galaxies that in our universe. And this is going to offer a challenge to that old method. So everyone, eyes to the stars, and all I can say is this is something fascinating. It gets us away from the Republican and the DSA and the Democrat BS. You know, I'm really getting bored and sick of it all.
Right.
But anyway, so I'm looking to the stars and to the universe.
Sounds good.
For a break.
You got it.
But anyway, keep your eye on this.
You got it.
It's a fascinating subject.
Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it, Nancy. Dave is standing by. Dave, go ahead. You're on TalkBack. It's open phone, sir. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to make a quick comment about free market, communism, and socialism. To me, communism is simple. It's public ownership of something. And I'll give an example is the public forest, the national forest. I consider that communism. Free market is a little more difficult. It basically it means business being able to do whatever it wants without rules, regulations, or laws or taxes. And that's a true free market, when business is free to do whatever it wants. And socialism is rules as far as, you know, maybe taxes for the good of the public is as seen by the government. And that's kind of my attitude towards it. If free market is allowed to run free, it will become a monopoly.
Okay.
And socialism is when government steps in and limits what free market can do.
All right, Dave, thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Jeff is standing by. Jeff, good morning, sir. You've got about a minute and a half. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning. I can't even begin to comment on what Dave, he's got it all wrong, but my thoughts have turned recently to the common good. As part of Catholic social teaching is that we have to pay attention to the common good. And it's also part of the conversation out there around socialism and communism, because that's one of the things Don wants to do with the grocery stores in New York is we want to do this for the common good. But yet, when I come down to it, it's really hard to find anybody who can define what the common good is.
Right.
And what most people think it is, I believe, I could be wrong and I'd be willing to hear other people talk about this, is that it's the greatest good for the greatest number.
Right.
But that's not the common good. That's called utilitarianism. What is the most useful? But it's bad for somebody. So the common good, in my mind, has to be good for everyone. If it's not good for everyone,
right,
it's not a common good. And so what does that mean? It means things like life.
We got about 15 seconds. We got about 10 seconds.
Everybody has a right to life. If you take away someone's right to life, you've destroyed the common good.
Thank you for
that's kind of where my head is.
Thank you for the call. We're going to come right back. Stay with us. Lots more calls to come. TalkBackers.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. A life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital. They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you can join the mission.
Donors choose. Support a classroom.
Build a future.
Did you know that every year, public school teachers spend nearly $500 of their own money for student supplies? Let's do the math. That comes out to over $1.2 billion a year. And that's just not right. At Donors Choose, we want students and teachers to have the tools they need for a great education. And now, more than ever, they need your help. Here's what you can do. Go to donorschoose.org and choose from teachers' requests that support reading, math, science, history, and more. Once a request is funded, we'll take care of shipping everything directly to the teacher. It's that easy. You'll receive thank you letters and photos from students and teachers and a report of how every dollar was spent. Teachers' needs have never been greater. Learn more at DonorsChoose.org.
Donors Choose. Support a classroom.
Build a future.
We're back. This is Talk Back for Monday, and we continue now with open phones. A lot of folks want to get their opinions across before we get to the bottom of the hour. Brad, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Peter. I really like listening to Jeff's comments. I mean, they're always so insightful.
He's a very, very wise man.
Yeah. I think we could all emulate that. I wanted to bring something to the attention of the listeners and ask them to take some action, and that is this: the Water Policy Interim Committee, so a committee that meets between sessions of the legislature, has been working on a bill that would the government would require all private well owners, so anyone that has a well on their property, to put a meter on that well. And the, wow, the leading cheerleaders, and I don't want to make this a Republican Democrat, because I think it has to be a little bit, you know, broader in terms of its focus than that. But the leading proponents of it happen to be a couple of Democrats on the committee. One of them from Missoula, Willis Curdy, who basically said people are going to have to get used to having that done. And the other is a gal out of Helena, Jill Kohenauer. But they believe that the government needs to get involved in ownership of water by having meters put on wells so that they know how much water is coming out of those. And they're saying that it has to do with the collection, the aquifer. But I heard or read recently that only about 2% of the water use in Montana comes from domestic utilization. So people, you know, doing their dishes, taking showers, watering their lawns. So I don't think we have a scientifically proven water crisis in Montana. I think this is just an opportunity for the government to do some overreach. So my call to action is, anyone who has a well or knows someone who has a well, please go to leg.mt.gov and look up the interim committee and find the members and tell them you're not interested in wells, because one of the people who attended the meeting represented a group of folks from the Valley County, and the overwhelming majority of people in that county don't want meters on their wells. As a matter of fact, they are, you know, adamantly opposed to it, and I think the same is true in a lot of communities in Western Montana. So this is just information for people to be aware of, that there are certain people that are coming to control your water, and everyone knows water is life. So thanks for letting me make that comment.
You bet. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Well put. Emmett is standing by. Emmett, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. Well, I was kind of disappointed by last on Friday's TalkBack with Susie Hedlund. She didn't answer my question about the internet and children and the internet in general. They always sidestep the important issues. But I think the internet has been dangerous. I don't have much time to talk, but I think it's really made people distant from each other. People aren't able to form close friendships. I think often, probably when, you know, kids get together to sleep over, it's just to watch the computer. I don't think people know how to talk to each other. People spend all their times on these iPhones. I've even seen this on the bus. I almost think that if you were to take people's iPhones and computers away for 7 days and make it a reality TV show, people would be melting down. You know, we were all better off without the computer. I remember in the 70s and the 80s, people did not have computers, except for the big, bulky Apple kind, and we were all the better for it. So really, I think we should limit screen time for children and for adults in general and get back to the art of conversation and real human relationships. I'm not going to get into AI. I rather enjoy Alexis, but that's my comment for the day, at
thank
least
you
for open phones. Thank you.
Thank you for the call. There was perfect timing. We got about 2 minutes to get Frank's call in. Frank, good morning. You're on TalkBack. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Peter.
Last, or the current edition of the Flathead Beacon here in Kalispell, got an article about the Libby cleanup, and it was interesting to that one of the local residents had mentioned how he used to go up in the attic and listen to the asbestos insulation from the vermiculite pop, like popcorn.
Wow.
Well, in actuality, it takes 2,000 degrees Celsius for a vermiculite to pop. The water molecules that are trapped inside of the ore are released like popcorn at that temperature, which would be like the same as a propane torch. So your houses have to be pretty much burning down to the ground to get that popping sound. And but I'd like to say that after the Superfund cleanup of Libby, if you had any insulation from asbestos in your roof, it was all removed. A very expensive process, but they took care of Libby. And it's quite a remarkable recovery with the new bridges and infrastructure. And it's really not the world's, America's worst disaster area at all, like some people would these lawyers that are just ambulance chasers would say. I would say Butte has got to be the world's worst disaster in Montana. Anyway.
All right. Thank you for the call, sir. And your timing is perfect because we're coming up against the end of our open phone segment. And when we come back, it's going to be the KGVO Book Club. The book is called The End of Ideology. And joining us here in the studio this morning, Dr. Michael Mayer, already here. And we've got Professor Mirdad Kia also on the phone. So this is going to be a great opportunity to hear about a great book and for you to discuss it. That's the popularity of the KGVO Book Club. And we'll get to that when we come back from the break. 406-721-1290 is our number. We're coming right back. Talk Back continues statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. High pressure rebuilding over the Northern Rockies, and that means gradual warming as we start the new week with partly sunny skies and highs in the low 80s. A few clouds developing overnight, and there is a lingering chance of isolated showers or thunderstorms with lows down into the 40s, maybe even a little colder if skies clear. Mostly sunny with a few clouds at times on Tuesday, and then mostly sunny Wednesday and Thursday. Highs back into the mid-90s, could even be the low 90s by the end of the week.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Monday edition of Talk Back. It is the KGVO Book Club, and we are officially getting started right now. I want to say good morning to Dr. Mirdad Kia joining us on the phone from the University of Montana. Mirdad, good morning, sir.
Good morning, Peter. Good morning, Nick.
And good morning,
thank
of course,
you very
to,
much
to
for,
our,
yeah, for having us again.
To our in-studio guest, Dr. Michael Mayer, Professor Emeritus at UM. And so, gentlemen, the floor is yours.
Well, the book we're talking about today is by Daniel Bell, who is a sociologist, and it's called The End of Ideology. It was published in 1960, again in 61, and then repeatedly throughout the next couple
perhaps
of
perhaps a little premature in 1960 to say.
Decades. in a sense, yes, but from his perspective at that time, maybe not. It's very interesting, but just briefly, Bell was a sociologist, as I said. He was born on the Lower East Side of New York. His parents were immigrants from Eastern Europe. He went to City College of New York and then did graduate work at Columbia, became a journalist, began teaching sociology at Columbia did his PhD. In fact, they allowed him to submit this book as his doctoral dissertation.
Wow.
And then he taught at Columbia for a decade until he went to Harvard in 1969. The book is really a series of essays. Most of them are fairly short, although some are a little longer. And they deal with things such as a critique of the theory of mass society, an attack on C. Wright Mills' book, The Power Elite, an assessment of economics, economic theory at that time, an essay on national character, a famous essay that was reprinted here that it was published on McCarthy and his supporters. There's an interesting essay on organized crime and the issue of, quote, a crime wave in the late 50s, and an essay on the failure of socialism. But the main focus is his argument that the age of ideology has ended, that the great passionate ideologies of the 20th century, fascism, communism, had wrought such destruction, and they'd exhausted they'd run their course. They'd exhausted their lifespan. And it's important to realize this was part of a larger intellectual discussion that had been going on for a decade and a half when he published this. There are a group of intellectuals known as pluralists, and Bell was one of them, who argued that the American state, one of the reasons that European ideas about socialism and so on, and European ideas about the structure of American society, particularly the Frankfurt School, didn't work in America because as the 50s came about, the issues that America faced, issues of prosperity rather than depression in the 30s, were issues that were not necessarily likely to be solved by ideology. They were likely to be solved by technical assessments, by expertise. And I think that's a good place to stop. Merida, you want to add anything to that? We've only got a couple of minutes before break.
I'd rather actually go to the break and then come back. But as you read this book, you realize that, some highly educated folks, so-called intellectuals, need to be much more patient with their conclusions and not jump with excitement into making very bombastic declarations. He's a brilliant writer. There's no doubt he has a lot of insight. There's no doubt about that. He has read thoroughly, the literature that he is responding to. But at the same time, I think he's a bit too anxious to come to major conclusions. I think patience and a little bit of more deliberation would have been a bit helpful here. But I would like to talk when we come back about, in fact, the return of ideology rather than the end of ideology, as he proclaims it, and why we have this return and what is so attractive about socialism as we see in this country.
All right, with that, we're just seconds away from our hard break. We're going to come right back. This is the KGVO Book Club, in case you just joined us. Joining us on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia, University of Montana history professor, and Dr. Michael Mayer, professor emeritus, here in the studio. And again, the book is called The End of Ideology. The author is David Bell, and we'll be taking calls from you as well. So we're going to come right back after this quick timeout. Thanks for joining us statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Life is full of moments, from first steps, first loves, moments that make life special. And life can also bring us difficult and disruptive moments like a cancer diagnosis, which is why the groundbreaking work of Stand Up to Cancer is so vital.
They know the problem of cancer won't be solved by one doctor, one lab, or one hospital. It takes collaboration. That's why Stand Up to Cancer brings together top minds from different fields to find new and better treatments so patients can thrive. So when it matters, we can all show up for moments of a lifetime. Please join Stand Up to Cancer and Myrtle Beach to help families get back to where they belong, making new memories for years to come. Please go to standuptocancer.org to see how you can join the mission.
Not all people are the same. And yet, when we visit the doctor, our treatments don't look that different. Why is that? Because we just don't have enough information to do it better. By gathering health data from 1 million people, our country's best researchers will be able to develop treatments that are as unique and complex as we are. With this new information, doctors will have a better understanding of disease so they can innovate the next great breakthroughs in medicine. Learn more at joinallofus.org.
All right, we are back on Talk Back, and evidently this book is a little bit more well-read than we might have thought, because the calls are coming in that the people want to talk about the book called The End of Ideology. And again, joining us in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia. Gentlemen, let's get the conversation started, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, let's go to Steve's call. Steve, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Yes, this question is for Mirdad. Mirdad, number one, I think you're a very nice man. You sound well-meaning. You sound like you have a very kind heart. And I'm sure most of the Iranian people are very similar to you. This is going to be a couple-part question for you. But you and I have disagreed on the approach to Iran. You've advocated for a long time for the U.S. to take action. We have. I think you're seeing firsthand that we're going to abandon any hope of liberating the actual people and giving them a better life. In fact, the tyrants who run the place probably are going to have even a stronger grip. We're going to have higher fuel prices forever. That will lead to higher inflation because we're going to leave. We're going to bow out. We're going to do what we do for the last 30 years and surrender because we entered into these unwinnable wars that, frankly, just don't have the American heart and effort behind them, because we know they're unwinnable and they're a waste of time and they're really just serving the few. One, I have a question for you. How does that make you feel, knowing that end is inevitable and it will happen? We will get out. We will surrender, just like in Afghanistan. It will be miserable for the people and get worse, frankly, for them probably. That's thing one. Thing two is related to socialism. I've contended this for a long time. Our elected leaders on both sides, Republican and Democrat, are only interested in power for themselves. And these socialists are doing a great job at propaganda. And that's all it is. I mean, we know they can't make rent cheaper. They can't make medical costs cheaper. But unfortunately, we have politicians that don't listen to their electorate. Trump was elected with a mandate for no new wars, right? He was elected for a mandate of make it more affordable. He has done anything but. I didn't vote for him. I wrote in JFK Jr. As my selection, but I know my wife did, and many others like her feel betrayed. They feel like this man has done nothing but to harm our country, our outcomes, our children's outcomes, and are inevitably probably the longevity of our country. Certainly destroyed his legacy. And I'm just curious, sir, or for both of you, do you think that these politicians with their false promises on all sides are really the blame here? They do nothing. They claim they're going to do something. They get elected and then they don't act on it.
Well, Steve,
or they do the opposite.
Steve, thanks for calling. This is the KGVO Book Club. It's kind of off topic, but if you gentlemen wanted to address that real quickly, please go ahead.
Yeah, I think actually, you know, we are more in agreement than disagreement. On the second, you know, and I will very briefly talk about the first point about Iran, but which is not part of this discussion. But The issue is correctly assessed by Steve in the sense that I think both parties came to a point of basically not offering much of concrete solutions, and there was an absence in the Republican Party which was filled by the populist sort of Trumpian, as they would call it, alternative, which took it to a new direction. And I think we see the same thing in the among the Democrats, kind of a vacuum that is nothing exciting, nothing promising, nothing new, nothing invigorating. You know, we have the same still, you know, leaders with last names Clinton and Obama and so on and so forth. And the result is there is a gap, there is a vacuum. And into this vacuum comes first Bernie Sanders and then Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And now you see a wholesale movement, you know, to take it to democratic socialist, or shall we call it as it is, a social democratic or a socialist option. And I agree. I think in some ways the bankruptcy, the ideological and political bankruptcy of both parties have been showing itself very clearly in these moves, either to the populist right or to socialism among the Democrats. As far as Iran is concerned, I have never pinned my hope on any president or any political party in this country. I did and I do still support any attempt to diminish the power of the leadership inside Iran. I never supported, for example, destruction of the infrastructure or petrochemical companies and so on and so forth. But just suffice to say that I'm not as pessimistic as you are. I think more is coming, and more is coming from inside. And it's going to be actually very exciting to watch what is unfolding right now. This struggle has been going on for nearly 100 years, and it will continue until we achieve what we want, which is a change of government and creation of a more democratic and constitutional form of system inside Iran.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We have exactly a minute left before I take our commercial break. But in case you're just joining us, this is the KGVO Book Club with our guest, Dr. Michael Mayer, here in the studio, Professor Emeritus at UM. Of course, you just heard the voice of Dr. Mirdad Kia, University of Montana, Professor of History. And we're going to get back to discussing the book, The End of Ideology by Daniel Bell. And we will do that when we come back from the break. So we have Rick and Helena and Dave all standing by, waiting to weigh in with their thoughts on the book. And hopefully you as well. We have a couple phone lines open at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. We're going to come right back after this quick timeout and dive into the book, indeed. So it's the KGVO Book Club right here on Talkback statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Dust collect.
Talkback rolls right along this morning, and of course it's the KGVO Book Club here in the studio. Dr. Michael Mayer on the phone, Dr. Mirdad Kia, and gentlemen, let's get another call on. This is Rick. Rick, thanks for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, doctors, I don't know if this has a lot to do with the book, but it has a lot to do with society. Have any of you ever heard of Dr. John Calhoun? He's an ethologist, and he, back in the late 60s, he was contracted by the U.S. government medical services to do a experiment with mice called Universe 25. Have any of you heard of this?
Well, I don't. Oh, go ahead, Michael.
I say no. I'm not familiar with it.
Well, it was mammal. It was a mammal experiment where they took mice, and not that humans are mice, but we do have the same mammal traits, and they put them in a utopian society, and they weren't want for food nor water or any luxuries that I guess mice would have, and eventually the alpha mice turned on the non-alpha mice, and they started killing them. And once they were dead, the dominant alpha mice turned on each other. And eventually there was one mouse left and the mouse died. Do you believe that that reflection of society is proper today, that we're killing ourselves, whether we're Republicans or Democrats? And or do we need to have alphas in every society, and every person has to have some alpha in them for the human experiment not to fail?
Okay, thanks for the call, gentlemen.
Well, that in one sense, you know, that cosmic question is kind of beyond my pay grade, but I think we have examples in human history of attempts at utopias. In this country, from small scale 19th century things like Brook Farm or the Oneida community, and those eventually collapsed sort of their own weight. And we've seen the utopian experiments in Nazi Germany and in Soviet Russia, and those didn't come out well either. And then, you know, again, look at whether it's China, Cambodia, any of these attempts to impose utopian system on people fail, partly because human beings aren't perfect. You know, there is no system. And this is one of the things, getting back to the book, that Bell was writing about, that those sorts of great dreams, which had been prevalent in the 1930s, seemed exhausted by the 1950s.
Yep.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Helena. Helena, good morning. Thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I know we're discussing this book, The End of Ideology. We might look at it as the return of ideology. I was wondering if your guest could talk a little bit more about the resurgence or the appearance of democratic socialism as an ideology, specifically within the Democratic Party. And also, sometimes when I hear the media comment on this resurgence of ideology, they lump everything together. You know, they might call it communism, they might call it socialism straight. My understanding is that there are various forms of or manifestations of democratic socialism around the world, and one of them is Scandinavian countries, which have adopted it without losing democracy. And I was wondering if your guests could comment on those kinds of examples of these ideals or this ideology.
Okay, we have two minutes to our heartbreak.
Just real quickly, I mean, Scandinavia is a good example because back in the late 80s and 90s, the Scandinavian countries found out that you can't redistribute wealth if you don't have any. And they turned toward more market economies. And in fact, the Scandinavian countries today have a more market economy than the United States does. So looking at them as socialist examples, I think is misguided, although it's often pointed to. They do have elaborate welfare states and systems, but that's not socialism. Socialism is the government ownership of the means of production. And again, Scandinavia turned away from that and turned away from the hyper-intervention that they had practiced for a number of years and basically ran the ship aground.
You bet. Okay, we are about a minute away from our hard break, so we're gonna take a top of the hour break here. And of course, the book is called "The End of Ideologies." Daniel Bell. In case you just may have joined us, this is the KGVO Book Club. We do this once a month, and Dr. Michael Mayer joining us here in the studio this morning, Professor Emeritus at UM, and of course, University of Montana History Professor Dr. Mirdad Kia, also joining us on the phone. And we have folks waiting. Dave and Emmett are both waiting to give their comments when we come back from the top of the hour break. And several other phone lines are open, so if there's something you'd like to comment on about the book or about our discussion, please feel free to give us a call. We'll put you in queue and get you on just as quickly as we can. Again, the number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. And we thank everybody for joining us this morning, and we appreciate you being with us for TalkBack, which, of course, is statewide right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. And, of course, we're all across the state, and we appreciate calls from all over the state of Montana as we start our next hour coming up in just a moment.
Views and opinions expressed on TalkBack are not those of the staff, management, or advertisers.
This is the Montana News Network's TalkBack. Join the conversation at 721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309 with producer Nick Christensen and your host, Peter Christian.
Welcome back, everyone. Hour number two of the Monday edition of TalkBack rolling right along, and we are in hour number two already of the KGVO Book Club. And we are privileged to have with us here in the studio Dr. Michael Mayer, Professor Emeritus at UM, and University of Montana History Professor Dr. Mirdad Kia joining us on the phone. And and Mirdad, you had a comment you wanted to make. So, I'm sorry.
Yeah, because of
the book real quick.
Helena's okay. Great question about socialism, and especially in the Scandinavian countries. I think there is a lot of confusion, and there are different shades of socialism. And, of course, until the Russian Revolution of 1917, the ideology was simply referred to as social democracy. And, of course, the Russian Revolution took it to a new level of a communism and communist revolution and communist party and so on and so forth, whereas European social democracy retained elements of democratic order with a socialist economy. And Mike is absolutely correct. More recently, even social democracies such as Scandinavian countries have moved toward more of a market economy. But that social democracy never turned into communism, Soviet style or Chinese style or Vietnamese style or Albanian style or Cuban style. They moved toward, communism moved toward totalitarianism, one-party system, whereas European social democracy, for the most part, remain multi-party and mixed economy, and they have become even more mixed and more moving toward market economy recently. So I think convoluting them, putting them all together, is a little bit misleading, as Helena's question suggested. But there are elements that they share in common, and there is a sense that that controlling or having some kind of control and ownership over the principal means of economic production is necessary to regulate the economy and not allow free market economy to reign supreme.
We have about a minute and a half. Go ahead, Michael, please.
Just briefly, I think the point that Helena, or related to the point at least that Helena was making, is that people, I think, are turning to this, at least some people are, in the United States because of frustration. What's interesting is, unlike, say, the 30s, when people were turning to it because they were genuinely facing scarcity, What you see mostly today is people in relatively privileged positions turning to it because they're not doing as well as they would like to do. And there always has been, going back to the 19, Fourier, Feuerbach, any of the Marx himself, Engels, there always seems to be an element of resentment that somebody has, somebody has more than I do. There must be something wrong with this.
We are right in the middle of a great book called The End of Ideology. Daniel Bell, of course, discussing it here in the studio. Dr. Michael Merritt, Professor Emeritus at UM, and University of Montana History Professor Dr. Mirdad Kia also joining us on the phone. And we also have the phone lines are lighting up. We have Dave, we have Ben, Catherine, and Emmett, and all of them want to comment on this book. And we hope that you'll stay with us throughout this entire hour. Again, the number 406-721-1290. Or 1-800-568-5309. And we appreciate both these gentlemen and, of course, all of you being with us today for the KGVO Book Club as you're listening to Talk Back statewide right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network, where we're coming right back after this timeout. Talkbackers.
Dennis Bragg with your Town Square weather. High pressure rebuilding over the Northern Rockies, and that means gradual warming as we start the new week with partly sunny skies and highs in the low 80s. A few clouds developing overnight, and there is a lingering chance of isolated showers or thunderstorms with lows down into the 40s, maybe even a little colder if skies clear. Mostly sunny with a few clouds at times on Tuesday, and then mostly sunny Wednesday and Thursday. Highs back into the mid-90s, could even be the low 90s by the end of the week.
No matter who we call family, when we choose to get the flu shot, we're protecting them. That's especially true for those who are 65 and older and people with chronic conditions like heart disease, diabetes, or stroke. Getting a flu shot every year decreases your chances of getting the flu. If you do get the flu, the vaccine makes you less likely to be hospitalized or die from it. Protect yourself and the ones you love by getting your flu shot. Learn more at heart.org/flu.
Being a family caregiver can be rewarding, but it can also be expensive. Search caregiver compensation programs at the AARP Foundation Paid for Care Hub, developed with support from United Healthcare. Visit paidforcare.aarpfoundation.org.
Hey, we appreciate all of you joining us on this edition of Talk Back. Of course, it's the KGVO Book Club, and the phone lines are almost full, so let's get right to these callers. Dave has been waiting the longest. Dave, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I'd like to talk about free market for a minute. You know, as a student of history, my view, free market is not as free as it was back in the 1880s and thereon, that business was much freer to put out bad products and less taxes and pollute the environment. It was much freer to, as long as they made money. They were free to make money, and those kind of regulations are society, or could be called socialism, stepped in for the society benefit to put regulations on business for the benefit of society. And if we want true free market, where businesses are free to put out whatever they want, that would be free market. But since we have the regulations, they have to abide by them, and it costs them money to clean their factories up and make a clean product.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Gentlemen, your response. Yeah,
well, a couple of things. The free market has never been as free as Dave said. I don't know if he's ever heard of the Granger laws that regulated railroad rates in the 1880s or some of the other laws that were passed. And sometimes government intervenes to protect business. Tariffs are a good example of that. The free market that Dave's talking about never really existed, and the idea that anything costs big business is short-sighted because they just pass the cost on to the consumer.
All right, let's get another call in. This is Ben. Ben, good morning. You're on TalkBack on the KGVO Book Club. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. I was reading through the afterword of Bell's 1988 version or edition of The End of Ideology, and Bell is criticized for providing an intellectual justification for technocracy, and he refuted that in his afterword, but I could definitely see how his idea that ideology would be replaced by technology would be used as an apology for technocracy. And Zbigniew Brzezinski in Between Two Ages said that science would supplant ideology and referenced David Bell explicitly. But I'm wondering if we're seeing the end of science as a replacement for ideology. And during COVID, we heard the constant refrain, follow the science. Dr. Fauci called him, or Dr. Fauci said, I am the science. And as a result of some of the more arbitrary aspects of scientific leadership, we see sort of a rejection of science and experts and even the Enlightenment. And I just was wondering what the professors thought of that.
Wow, good thought, gentlemen.
Really good thoughts and a very good question. It's easy to take Bell as suggesting that the problems are technological because he pretty much says so in the first edition. He said, but another equally important reason for being unable to affect events is the onset of what can only call technical decision-making. And he talks about the shifts in power that come from that because these decisions are subject not to ideology but to technical answers. And he comes back to that late in the book when he says that basically the faith in what used to be the faith in ideology is turning toward technology. And he certainly had an influence. These ideas were floating around. John Kennedy said, I would like to say a word about the difference between myth and reality. Most of us are conditioned for many years to have political viewpoint, Republican or Democrat, liberal, conservative, moderate. The fact is, most of the problems, or at least many of them that we now face, are technical problems, are administrative problems. They're very sophisticated judgments, which do not lend themselves to the great sort of passionate movements which have stirred this country so often in the past. That idea was floating around, and you have to understand that sense was a result of World War II and the crashing and burning of one of the great utopian ideologies, Nazism, that led to the death of 60 million people in World War II and the still persisting threat of the Soviet Union, which was responsible for the deaths of tens of millions of people ultimately.
Mirdad.
Yeah, I tend to think that, I basically agree with what Mike just said. And also, I think these ideological constructs are too holistic, too all-inclusive, and sometimes they impose ideas which concrete issues and problems and challenges cannot be resolved with. That is, the majority of the issues we have are technical problems, things that a government or an industry or a set of individuals have to deal with and find solutions. And ideological constructs tend to always generalize and sort of offer these big bombastic solutions, which when you apply them to concrete technical issues, do not apply. So in some ways, I actually agree with Bell that the end of ideology in that sense has arrived. We have to understand issues within the context of what challenges they bring and what kind of people we need to tackle them, rather than this large, comprehensive, abstract ideas which cannot be applied to concrete issues on a daily basis.
Also, going back to Dave's point about the free market, his because it's related to what Ben said about ideology, that the notion that free markets are completely unchecked, the people like Daniel Bell, the so-called pluralists of the post-World War II era, argued that that big business was checked by big labor and by unions of consumers and these sorts of things, what John Kenneth Galbraith called countervailing powers.
All right, we're going to come right back. And when we come back, we have Catherine, Harry, Sam, and a host of others on the phone to discuss the end of ideology with Daniel Bell on the KGVO Book Club. We'll be right back.
Network.
I'm Dennis Bragg. Hotshot crews working the big Sand Creek fire in southwest Montana are attempting a direct attack along the southern front of the fire in the West Pioneers. Operations Section Chief Phil Knob says the fire managers are positioning rescue teams in the rugged terrain and a short-haul helicopter nearby just in case there are any injuries.
They're basically on the line below the helicopter, about 100 feet or so of that line, and that allows the helicopter to get lower that medical personnel in through the timber into really, really tight spaces. They get on the ground, and then they basically grab that patient, if there is a patient, and just pull them right out. So it's a very advantageous way to ensure we're getting the ability to extract somebody in this super-duper hard country.
The two West Pioneer fires have burned over 40,000 acres combined. Pain at the pump is setting new records as gasoline prices continue to climb across Montana and the country. According to AAA, Montana's average price for regular unleaded rose 4 cents over the past week to $4.29 a gallon. The national average also turned upward to $4.07. AAA says this is now the most expensive August on record for gas prices. Industry analysts say global crude prices in the $80 per barrel range are keeping pump prices elevated despite falling domestic demand and the slight drop in fuel production we normally see this time of the year. Around the state, drivers in Billings and Great Falls have been paying an average of $4.29 a gallon over the weekend. Missoula was slightly lower at $4.24. Meanwhile, public EV charging rates, interestingly enough, remain steady at $4.42 per kilowatt hour. Drivers in Anaconda and Deer Lodge can expect final touches on a big traffic signal project this week. The Montana Department of Transportation and Montana Lines Incorporated resuming work to apply the final pavement markings along Highway 1 in Anaconda before moving to Deer Lodge later in the week. That project started last year. This is the Montana State News Network.
Montana's future is on the line. Will you stand up and fight? Montana was built on hard work, strong families, and economic freedom. Americans for Prosperity is building a grassroots movement, and we need you to help lead the charge. Our wages are among the lowest in the nation. Our children rank near the bottom in math and reading. Home ownership is becoming an out-of-reach dream for many, while government interference and radical regulations strangle our industries. Join us today. Visit AmericansForProsperity.org. Paid for by Americans for Prosperity.
Hi, I'm Montana Highway Patrol Colonel Kurt Seger, encouraging you to stay safe on the road this summer. More fatalities occur on the road from Memorial Day to Labor Day. To ensure Montanans and our visitors get to and from their destination safely this summer, Montana Highway Patrol troopers will be increasing patrols. You can help. Never get behind the wheel intoxicated, follow the speed limit, and always buckle up. Together we can save lives. Sponsored by the Montana Department of Justice.
Talk Back continues. Again, it's the KGVO Book Club. The book is called The End of Ideology with Daniel Bell. On the phone, Dr. Mirdad Key here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer. And folks have been waiting. Let's get right to it. Catherine, you're on. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. this is kind of something I've been mulling over with regard to this book. Ideology of all kinds is basically it's a mask that's used to obfuscate the naked desire for power over others, which has gone on since the beginning of time. It's a desire that is nested in the soul and the mind of every human, I think. People who start businesses are wanting to have control over their own systems, their own family, their own clan, whatever, to to, and they provide a business to do so. People who are alphas and people who are betas, yes. And alphas do like to control other people for their own purposes. Ideology is a great tool for doing so. Socialism is a great tool for doing so. And if you can convince people to buy into that, you can garner more and more power over them. Anyway, just something I was thinking about.
All right, Catherine, thank you for the call. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
Well, it's an interesting observation. I think there's a good bit of truth that people have debated for centuries whether ideology is a motivating factor or just a cover for other motivations. I suspect it's both with different weightings at different times. Merida, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think what you have always a set of ideas presented by those in power or those who want power in order to mobilize a segment of the society in order to either expand their power base or to seize power from outside of it. These ideological parties that we have, for example, in the 19th century, more and more, you know, whether they are on the conservative side or on the left, socialist, communism, and so on and so forth, these are groups of people, individuals, leaders, who are aiming to seize more power or complete power. And therefore, I personally always look at those who have very strong ideological commitments with a great deal of, I would say, not skepticism, but with a bit of concern, actually. What is, instead of falling in love with ideas, because these ideas are words, basically, are claims, we have to look at what lies behind them, and who is behind them, and who is perpetuating them, and who wants to come and use those ideas to seize power. And I think if you look at it this way, not to fall in love with ideas, but in fact what the aim of using them is, and who is behind them, and what the purpose and objectives of using them is, then I think we get to the gist of what an ideological construct is. I'm always worried about people who have very ready-made, simplistic, solutions. I think solutions are more complicated. Solutions should be more nuanced. And whenever people say, well, it's easy, I think we should do this, that really worries me. And of course, when it's very nicely packaged and put together with a ribbon on top, and it's called democratic socialism or, progressive conservatism, whatever it is called, I get very, very worried, because life is much more complicated and solutions are very, very challenging. And they require a much more nuanced approach than simplistic solutions.
Is there a place that people go to get descriptions like that, to call something progressive socialism? Is there a symbolist out there somewhere that shows what to call things?
I'm sure that there are plenty of places on the internet that you can go for that sort of thing. But there always have been. I mean, they've gone to the writings of Marxists, of heterodox Marxists like Antonio Gramsci. I mean, there's always somebody who's willing to offer a vocabulary, a language. And interestingly enough, one of the things that Bell suggests is toning down the rhetoric. He doesn't put it that way, but he says, if the end of ideology has any meaning, it's to ask for the end of rhetoric. And he goes on to point out that rhetoric led somebody to throw a bomb in the French Chamber of Deputies, and one of the people advocating the rhetoric said, well, a few lives, what the hell does it matter?
And something, what Mike just said, here are basically two parties in Washington. Why did people elect you, whether you are conservative or liberal or left, right, Republican, Democrat, why did people elect you? You know, they elected you to go to Washington to find solutions and to offer solutions to the problems that exist in the society. They did not elect you to go there and throw pie at each other and call each other, you know, fascist or Marxist or communist or, you know, or this and that.
You bet.
You know, these labels don't work. You have to find solutions with people's problems.
We're going to come right back.
Yeah.
We're going to come right back and continue this conversation. Lots of folks waiting on the phone. We'll get to those calls right after this timeout here on Talkback on the KGVO Book Club. Hey, if you're waking
tens of millions of tickets,
tens of millions of tickets,
tens of millions of tickets.
Thank you, VetTix. Thank you.
Thank you, FirstTix.
Thank you, VetTix and FirstTix.
Thanks to your support, the nonprofits VetTix and FirstTix have given away tens of millions of tickets and counting to vets currently serving military, the immediate family of troops killed in action, and our brave, current, and former first responders. These tickets are a meaningful way to say thank you to America's heroes and help them re-engage with American life by giving them free, fun experiences and new happy memories that'll last a lifetime. And now, we want you to be part of the mission. Got extra tickets to concerts, games, or special events? Or want to see if you qualify? We want you to go to vettix.org and firsttix.org today. Give something to those who gave.
Hey, we are back on Talkback. And it's the KGVO Book Club. The book, of course, is called The End of Ideology with Daniel Bell, Dr. Mirdad Kia on the phone, Dr. Michael Mayer here in the studio, and Harry has been waiting the longest. Harry, thank you for holding. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, good morning, gentlemen. Yeah, you know, the idea that ideology would go away is it's a nice idea, but our thought, but it's, you know, they just tend to morph, change, and, you know, even the worst ones, fascism, white supremacy, anti-Semitism, they all, you know, they go under the carpet for a while, but they show up in a different form somewhere else. To the labels, I mean, and that's the trouble. It's a label. Socialism. Well, you know, the capitalism. I mean, there's so many different forms and variations of them that there's, you know, pure capitalism never has been around, but it doesn't work. Neither does pure socialism. To me, you know, capitalism is better, but it has to be managed. Anytime you start managing it, then you're starting, you know, a socialized part of it, because you got to have laws. You got to have, you know, look after people that work for other people and all that. So, you know, you look at Saudi Arabia, that's a capitalist country, but I wouldn't want to live there. I mean, you know, they have the families, you know, Saudi family owns a lot and they control a lot. So, I mean, it's more of the family is in charge. And so it's, again, it's, and right now it's used, of course, as a political tool. I mean, we want to, oh, they're socialists, a fear factor, communists, you know, they're going to come in and take all your stuff. You know, nobody's saying that, but that's a fear factor. And, you know, call Trump a fascist. He's not a fascist, but that he's going to come and take away all your stuff again, you know, going to kill you all, whatever, the same fear factor that they use time and time again. And I, like Amir had said, it's everything's shades of gray. There's, you know, more nuanced, and people, you know, it's not an easy thing to argue, but it's, you know, it's easier to just throw out generalities, and, you know, everything is a lot more nuanced. It's a hard, it doesn't play good in politics, but it's a fact. And although I disagree with Mirda that people, there's a certain amount of people do want people to throw pies in people's faces. I mean, it's the idea that I want to stick it to the liberals. You know, that's all one reason why Trump got in there, because he's going to stick it to the liberals. He's going to show them, you know, brainiac guys that they...
I agree with you, Harry, on that one. No, I agree with you on that.
Harry, yeah, thanks
some
for the,
people
thanks
like
for the, call.
The show, actually. You know,
Harry's point is well taken, but I take it farther, because Harry says, well, you know, markets need to be managed. Well, do they need to be? Let's assume that they do for a minute. The question then becomes who's in charge. And one of the great myths is that businesses hate regulation. Businesses love regulation as long as they can write the regs. They don't like free market competition. It costs, you know, some of their losers. The airlines were dragged kicking and screaming into deregulation by Carter and then Reagan in the late 70s and early 80s. The biggest opponents of deregulation were the airlines. They didn't want to compete, and look what's happened. Prices have come down in real dollars. So, as Harry said, it's a very complicated sort of thing.
You bet. Yeah, go ahead,
just,
your dad.
Just a note on Saudi Arabia, I wouldn't call it capitalism. It's more tribal sort of control over the means of production. 7,000 princes, members of the royal family, own something close to 85 to 90% of all assets. It is capitalistic in the sense that they want to maximize their profit. But in fact, it's a monopoly, and it's a tribal monopoly. It's a family monopoly. And whoever marries to the family, they join the big boss and his family. And those who don't are underprivileged. And of course, it is a form of free market, but it is not free at all, and it's very much controlled for the empowerment of the ruling dynasty.
And the ruling dynasty is just that, ruling. They're the government.
Is there such a thing as a royal, royal democracy? I maybe not, I guess.
Well, maybe Britain.
Yeah. We are coming up against a break. And again, we want to say thank you to Dr. Mirdad Kia and Dr. Michael Mayer for lending their expertise and bringing us these books. I mean, I'm hoping that people are keeping track. And how many of these do we have out so far now?
Well, next month will be our fourth anniversary. It'll be our 49th book.
Wow. That's awesome. All right, so we're going to come right back, continue with the book we're looking at today, The End of Ideology, by the author Daniel Bell. And we're looking forward to hearing from Sam. We've got Emmett. We've got Jeff. And hopefully you, sometime between now and the top of the hour, to give us a call at 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. Talk back statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
We all have someone we love, like the favorite lyric in our favorite song. You can't imagine life without them. So tell them today, I love you. Get screened. It could help save their life. Visit cancer.org/get screened to learn more.
Hey, the Monday edition of Talk Back is rolling right along. And, of course, it's the KGVO Book Club. And the book is called The End of Ideology with Daniel Bell. Here in the studio, Dr. Michael Mayer. On the phone is Dr. Mirdad Kia. And Sam has been waiting very patiently through the break. So, Sam, go ahead.
Hey there. I guess I was listening to the broadcast and, you know, I flipped through that book you guys are talking about, End of Ideologies. I guess I want to say a couple of things. First of all, I don't think there will be any end of ideologies. To even bring up the notion is completely silly and anti-intellectual, I'll say. And as far as, like, when it comes to who's in power, we have a few very powerful people controlling narratives all across the country. And so it's practically the same thing as like a monarchy called an oligarchy. And like the fact that I can't call Israel, what Israel is doing in Palestine, a genocide, is also a testament to how anti-intellectual everyone is in the United States. Like, we're talking about letting go of ideologies. What if you have love as the foundation of everything you believe in? And then that is the driving force for all of your politics, because you know that it's possible out there. But, right. like, you sit here and you say, like, you're trying to question some of these, you know, where people are coming from with some of the socialist ideas that they're trying out. Like, things are changing, man. Under capitalism, things are still changing, man, for the worse. So we got to try something, you know?
All right. Well, thank you for the call. Gentlemen, your thoughts.
Well, a couple of thoughts. Sam said that you can't say that Israel's committing genocide. He just did. And nothing bad is going to happen to him. The idea that these that ideas are controlled in the way he suggests, I think, is simply erroneous. For one thing, you can refute that. It doesn't meet Israel's actions in Gaza don't meet traditional definitions of genocide, and you can say that. And he can say he can come up with another argument. They do. You're entitled to say either side here, and control of information. Is a real issue. I mean, Orwell pointed to it in 1984. Certainly, information was controlled in the Soviet Union, Soviet bloc, East Germany, and lots of other places. But it's harder and harder to do that. And Meredith can speak to the difficulty of controlling information in Iran. I mean, ideas still get out and get circulated. And even within the Soviet Union, Samizdat circulated dissenting ideas.
The internet has changed the world. Go ahead, Meredith.
Yeah, dude, I think that, you know, this sense that there is an oligarchy, in some ways, you know, we have moved toward a more monopolized form of capitalism. But I do think that that to suggest that you cannot speak or denounce or criticize any government or any state, including the state of Israel or even the United States government, is not correct. And I think we have to, in fact, always remain critical of any government, any state, any politician, and any set of ideological construct. I do agree that to think that the end of ideology will somehow come is erroneous, and I think what we have is a reproduction of new ideological constructs as groups, organizations, political parties try to, again, exert more power or to seize power.
Yeah.
So I agree with you on that, but otherwise I think you have all the freedom in the world to criticize this program, any government, and any politician or any any state that you wish to. And I think that's why I think this country is different from many other countries.
Yeah, and also the idea that there's an economic oligarchy is like Bell says about ideology, is simplistic. Small business accounts for about 2/3 of employment in the United States. Higher than it was in the 1950s and 60s. That was the peak of employment by big businesses. And a lot of these big businesses that we talk about, mega businesses, started out as really small businesses in somebody's garage. And so, I think people have to be careful about these tossing out these terms, oligarchy, without thinking about them, without defining them, or without testing them against reality.
Let's try to get one more call in before we take a break. Emmett is standing by. Emmett, go ahead. What's your question?
Well, yeah, I wish I'd been able to have a talk earlier about this. I guess I just have a lot of questions about the book. It was written in 1960, correct?
Right.
Oh, man. I'm really confused about the end of ideology. Was the premise of the book that ideology was ending both in communism and, you know, socialism and Democrat, Republican in America, or even Catholic or Protestant? Or what is the definition for him of ideology? Because in 1960, we had the Soviet Union, we had communism, socialism was being taught in colleges and universities, and we were really split among Catholic and Protestant ideologies here in America. So we didn't yet have the Civil Rights Act, so Catholics were still discriminated against, and people formed tribes of ideology and religion in 1960. I'm kind of confused where this professor got this idea that we had a mellow world. In 1970, in 1970s, it seemed like we were mellowing out in America as far as ideology. We're kind of coming together, being more relaxed, but that seemed to end in the 80s. So if you could answer those questions, I'm just feel like deer in the headlights. I'm just shocked, you know, that someone would propose this, especially in the 60s when we were so divided, and now we're really still divided in the country on those same things.
All right.
Answer those questions, please.
Here's what we're going to do. We're 30 seconds away from a break, so both Mirdad and Michael are writing those thoughts down, and they'll respond to that when we come back from the break. Also, Jeff and Susan are on the phone, and we only have about 9 minutes left in our time together, and we want to talk about the next book as well. So we're going to come right back. The phone number 406-721-1290 or 1-800-568-5309. You've been listening to Talk Back, and we appreciate it. Statewide on the Montana Talks Radio Network.
Thinking about building. This is our shared heritage, but today we're divided, except for our love of wildlife and wild places they and we call home. We are closer than you think. Learn more at defenders.org.
Hey, Talk Back rolls right along, and we're getting into our final segment now, the KGBO Book Club with Dr. Mirdad Kia, Dr. Michael Mayer, and let's try to get at least one more call in. Jeff has been waiting. Jeff, good morning. You're on Talk Back. Go ahead, please.
Hey, good morning again. When I first heard the end of ideology, I was thinking Francis Fukuyama's The End of History, because I think both of them are equally hubristic, and if there's one person who knows hubris, it's me, because I make an art form out of it, but I couldn't read the book. I did some summaries, but as I was out there searching for a PDF of it, I came across an essay, a two-part essay. Actually, I only saw the first part. He wrote in 1988, and it's called The End of Ideology Revisited, Part 1, issued by Cambridge University Press. And in there, he discussed responses, you know, some of the central tenets and responses to it. And there were five responses. I'm not going to go through them all, but he has a premise in this that somebody quotes. It's striking that none of Bell's critics directly challenged the central argument that socialism was no longer relevant to the problems of Western industrial society. And that, to me, just kind of speaks to the hubris of the man, because of course socialism remains relevant to the problems of Western industrial society. Look at the Democrat Socialists of America. Look at how Venezuela and South America writ large has gone socialist. So, and the second part was that he, as part of the end of ideology, he was talking about basically the need for a big bureaucracy. And in this essay, he says, in a commencement address at Yale University in June of 1962, President Kennedy said, "What is at stake in our economic decisions today is not some grand warfare of rival ideologies, but the practical management of a modern economy. Politicals and labels and ideology approaches are relevant to the solutions." And to me, that's kind of not only the myopia of Bell, the myopia of the so-called ruling class, that they think they have the answers. All we need to do is manage our society properly, and it will be fine. And both Bell and everything since the publishing of this book just kind of disproves what he's saying. So I guess I'd like to hear you guys' comments on the veracity of the book and how well it has stood up to the test of time.
All right, Jeff, thanks for the call. Gentlemen, well, we have got about 3 minutes.
The trouble with prophecy is it never comes out the way you think it's going to, and that's the point that obviously Jeff's making. What Bell was arguing was, first of all, ideology, he followed Marx in defining it as ideas in action, and his point was that from the perspective of 1960, the grand utopian visions of the last century and the early part of the 20th century, and particularly Nazism and socialism, had lost credibility. And for that era and for that time and for many people at that time, they did. Obviously, history doesn't work in quite such simple terms. And as Jeff pointed out, other people are continually drawn to these things or redrawn to them or reinterpreting them. I just like to say one thing about to Emmett. If you think the 70s was mellow, that was the peak period of political bombings in American history. That's not my idea of mellow. Are we up to where we need to talk about the next book?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
Okay. The next book is by John O. McGinnis, McGinnis. And the title is Why Democracy Needs the Rich, which is sort of related to some of the things we've talked about today.
Wow.
It's published by Encounter Books, and I guess it's available at bookstores near you.
All right. Mirdad, any final words from you, sir?
No, it has been a wonderful discussion. I just want to thank all the listeners and all the callers for their wonderful questions.
You bet. Mirdad, it's always a pleasure to have you on the phone. And Dr. Mehra, thank you.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Appreciate it. And we are going to wrap things up here now. And Nick, if you can share what's coming up on Tuesday's show, sir, please.
Well, we got a little bit of time here. So,
please, yeah.
Mike, we got about a little over a minute if you want to talk a little bit more about the upcoming book.
Well, obviously, it's intended to be contrarian and controversial. And I think people will enjoy it. It's written with a relatively light touch, but it's a serious subject, and it's one that say the mayor of New York might consider.
There you go, Mr. Mondani.
Yes.
All right. So go ahead, Nick, please.
Yeah, we'll have Americans for Prosperity tomorrow for the first segment, and then the rest of the hour we'll have open phones. So that's about 8:20 to 9, and then from 9 to 10. That'll be State Auditor and Insurance Commissioner James Brown.
All right. We always have a great time with James Brown, and he's a funny guy, and he is full of information. It really knows his stuff. So I want to say thank you again to everybody who called in this morning. We appreciate it. And a special thanks to Dr. Keir and Dr. Mehr for sharing your expertise, and thanks for bringing these books along.
Thanks very much for having us.
You bet. And again, where are we in the series now? How many have we done so far?
Next month will be 49.
Wow. Getting close to 50. All right, there you go. So you guys get out there and make it a great day. We've got a beautiful day in progress right now, and we hope that you'll take the time to go out and enjoy it, and then join us tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock, for another edition of Talk Back. And so until then, we just hope to get out, and please drive safely, and take care of yourselves, and we hope to see you tomorrow morning, bright and early at 8 o'clock, for another edition of Talk Back statewide, right here on the Montana Talks Radio Network. On behalf of Nick Christensen, I'm Peter Christian. Have yourselves a great day.